Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining to start off the show, we've got Aki and Bree here. How are you two doing?
I had tacos. Nice. Yay!
Taco Tuesday.
I want tacos.
This is a Tuesday show,
I will eat
show,
tacos
right?
later, so, you know, it's
right,
all good.
Bree, this is totally a Tuesday show.
It's totally a Tuesday.
Pernell's going to be here later on.
Taco Tuesday, Taco Thursday, it's all the same.
Taco
it's all
Tuesday.
Good.
Taco Tuesday. Taco Thursday.
As far as I'm concerned, Taco Monday, Taco Tuesday, Taco Wednesday, it's all good.
There's going to be tacos on good. Saturday.
Sure.
Guests.
Yeah.
Guests are good. Joining us from Full Set, Sasha Reuter is here today. Sasha, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. You just put out the game Project Neon. For the people who don't know what this game is, what platforms it's on, give us the sales pitch. Tell us, what is Project Neon?
Sure. Project Neon is like a shoot 'em up or shmup, so to say. Like pretty much a 16-bit shooter. Originally developed for the Neo Geo, which is basically always the platform that I start on with my gaming projects. But it's now coming to like many more platforms. So it was initially released in 2024, but now it's coming to 14 plus new platforms, basically. And
wow.
Yeah, it already went live on Xbox Play Anywhere. So that already covers Xbox Series and Xbox One and Windows, obviously. It already came out on PlayStation last night, so on PlayStation 4 and 5, on Apple, everything Apple, basically. So if you buy it on the App Store, you get the iOS version, the tvOS version, the macOS version. We continue on that. So there's still the Switch version coming live pretty much next week on Thursday. Still waiting for Gabe and his team at Valve for pressing that button. So Steam is weirdly enough the only version that's like somewhat delayed right now, but it's all done. So just waiting for the button press there, and then it's also going to come out for Android for the non-Apple users. And then in November, it's actually coming to even more retro platforms. So it's coming to N64, Sega Saturn, and the Dreamcast.
That's insanity. First off, how do you make a game for these old platforms that aren't really supported anymore? How do you get into production for those?
Sure. So for the Neo Geo, there was quite some prior art, I would say, when I started in 2019 developing for it. So there were some people already, not a lot, just really a handful of people that put out games for the Neo Geo. Some of them actually also took their work and documented it. So there's a nice development wiki. Where everything Neo Geo has been documented by the folks like Fuertek and Neobits. So they just really went really deep into figuring out how the system works. So Fuertek is actually even reverse engineering all the special chips or did that in the past to basically figure out how they work. And then Neobits, for instance, put out their SDK or his SDK. Which he wrote and which he also used for his own game. And then there was some additional bits. There were still some things that were missing, that I really wanted to have that, I had to, invest in, or with a small team also. But yeah, started in 2019, basically working on that, and it shipped in 2024, Because again, there was quite some things that I really wanted to have. And instead of just like taking shortcuts, we decided to go all in. Most of the stuff that we developed, like we had somebody helping, for instance, with developing a special sound driver. So because as you said, like those systems are kind of old. They're not really like developing for them is not really like developing for like, a modern platform, right? So one of the things that you need to do for the Neo Geo is you need to have your own sound driver, basically, that runs on a dedicated CPU on like a Z80 CPU. And all the prior drivers that were there only played PCM soundtracks, but we wanted real FM synth basically tracks. And that took quite a while just pulling that off. But yeah, that work is even like available open source, made by Maria on GitHub. And yeah, that's just like one bit of it. And I would say like all the things, you just get started and then like you ideally don't stop, which is good for me because I can't really like stop. So like like it was like it took its time, right? But I just chucked up 2019, even still in 2024 when the game shipped. But now I'm basically doing full set full time.
That's really cool that you were able to make it full time, and that it just blows my mind that it's on all these retro platforms. Like our one co-host, Chris Taylor, I'm sure he's going to want this on N64, possibly Saturn, maybe Dreamcast.
He's
going to
want this on everything.
I don't know if he collects Neo Geo stuff. Our friend Big Adam is going to be getting into Neo Geo stuff, I think. So he might want
the time to start.
He might want to pick up some of these. I know go ahead, Bree.
Oh yeah, I mean Neo Geo was way ahead of his time, but why start your projects there exactly?
Oh, actually, like I didn't, when I started actually getting like more into game development in 2019, like I was just like doing a lot of like other stuff. Like I was working on at like ISPs, like internet service providers prior, and then I did my own startup and like all that jazz. And when I jumped into game development in 2019, I didn't start on the Neo Geo day one, but basically day seven. So okay. I started developing the first prototype in Pico 8. Which is like this very nice little development environment, or like it's a fantasy console, basically pretty constrained, but that also just allows you to focus on the essentials, which is like just putting out your first game and learn more about the core mechanics or like how to build a game loop pretty much. And then I wanted to have that on my Game Boy, but obviously you can't just like copy your Pico 8 file written in Lua to like a Game Boy. So I took that and basically rewrote that game in C for the Game Boy. Then I went to like a local demo scene event in Sydney, showed it off, and it was quite well received. And then I came home and was like, all right, and how do I get this now on where I really want it, which is like one of my arcade machines? And then it basically, that's how it spiraled or escalated. And then also there are some, when you look at arcades and doing games for like old arcade systems, the Neo Geo really becomes the apparent system because of its modularity, right? It already used cartridges. There was even like a multi-card already. So I knew how I could get my data on the program and like everything that I write, like run on the, or transferred to the system, right? So yeah. And it's my most beloved, I would say, platform. That's the main reason why Neo Geo, I would say. And I think the main reason is just like the balance of it's basically the pinnacle of 2D, right? Like if you think about it, there was like a few arcade platforms, but there was no other 2D platform after the Neo Geo, especially when you look at non-CD ones. So ones that were still like using, cartridges, or like real memory mapped cartridges. So yeah, that's the answer to that, I would say.
Yeah. Very cool.
question here. What made you want to release stuff on all this, on all these old, no longer supported items? Not because we've already covered how you're doing it, but what made you want to do it in the first place? Because, like, I can't imagine you're getting a ton of sales for, like, Nintendo 64 version of the game, and I have to imagine...
You would be amazed at the collector scene out there.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The retro gaming scene is booming, and there are even, like, schmucks. New N64s now from two different companies, which pump out, tens of thousands of these consoles.
Holy shit. Okay, never mind. That explains it then. Okay. Because all I was thinking is, that has to be a lot of work, and I can't imagine a lot of people have those consoles anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I have an N64 sitting right next to me. So, yeah.
Well, damn, that's okay, the spirit. No,
there you go, Bree. There's two games you could buy.
I know.
And Overserved, which we could talk about Overserved in a little bit. I have a quick question about the Saturn versions of these games. I noticed they're not on discs. They're on cartridges. Are they for the expansion port on the Saturn?
Yes.
And if so, how does that work?
But not for the one in the back. So there's also like this expansion port in the back where you put in like the video CD module, right?
Yeah.
Which has been used by Professor Abrasive for his Saturator, which you can use for basically playing copies of your games or like also your own developed homebrew basically, but we are not using that. We actually use the cartridge slot on top of the console, which in the past officially only has been used for memory expansions. So I think Street Fighter Alpha was using that, just to be able to like get more animation frames into memory. And then there was also an action replay for the Saturn, but that's pretty much. There's also the Netlink, which allowed you to play like against somebody else via like a modem.
Oh, that'll never take off.
What I said?
I said that'll never take off. That'll never be popular. Internet gaming.
People did that, and people remember that fondly. You mean just online X-Men gaming?
Nintendo.
I got your joke now. Sorry, it's not too late yet, but apparently too late for that.
Yeah, I'm a smartass. So.
So basically, it never has been used for actually shipping a game on cartridge. So these games, Project Neon and Overserved, are going to be the first ones. But there's even more that you might have already noticed in our trailers, or especially in the Overserved trailer. It's going to be cross-platform multiplayer. So you will be able to play from your Saturn or Dreamcast or N64 from your couch against somebody sitting on with their mobile phone in a subway or on a train in Japan, against somebody else playing in an arcade on an MVS or like a Neo Geo cabinet. And you will be able to play against each other with like up to 8 players across 14 plus platforms. Yeah.
How?
So our cartridges basically have like a lot of, like, they're not just simple cartridges. They also have things like Wi-Fi and even Bluetooth for additional controllers and all that.
They have got some tech packed in there. Damn. That's very impressive. My brain can't even comprehend someone on an N64 playing against somebody on a Neo Geo arcade. That blows
or
my
them,
mind. And I am
on
so
their phone,
eager to
right,
see that.
Sitting on the bus.
Yeah,
yeah.
I that sounds so.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's like a lot of times I need to repeat like myself basically, so that people actually like. Yeah, often they think that like they're mishearing. But yeah, that's basically, we have that all running. We wouldn't have announced that, and we wouldn't take like pre-orders if we wouldn't have the tech in place, right? So we have the cartridges. We always had already like the Neo Geo cartridge, which already has Wi-Fi. We already show people like what we actually do is on these cartridges. Is we also ship updates for the game. So the people who bought Project Neon in 2024, they still get updated versions of it with like Just quality of life improvements, but also like a new game mode. And like sometimes GFX, right? So we just recently added some animations that we couldn't fit in the initial release. So I added that back. So they're basically those cartridges are like real cartridges. So there's not like an SD card, in it or something. So they really use like flash chips and everything. But yeah, there's an additional, a module on it, which allows the user right from the menu of the game to connect to their Wi-Fi and pull down, updates. I can provide you with like some links to the YouTube videos so that people can actually look at that and see what I'm actually talking about here.
Definitely include them in the show notes. Yeah. God, that sounds so like this is stuff I didn't even know was possible. It's it's really, really cool to hear about. So what inspired you to bring it to current platforms? Like, Xbox,
accessibility,
PlayStation, Switch.
Yeah. Multiple things. So first of all, like accessibility, right? So it came out on the Neo Geo first. And Neo Geo games are quite always used to be expensive. And they're still like original games that go for like thousands and thousands of dollars. But also homebrew games, especially because their development is quite expensive. It's really involved from a hardware perspective. So if you compare like a cartridge from the N64 to a cartridge of the Neo Geo has like so much more tech, even if it's not as sophisticated as our cards with like extra Wi-Fi and everything. But just if you look at like original boards, it's actually, they're massive, right? Not sure if everyone saw like a Neo Geo cartridge, but it's almost like a VHS tape, size of cartridge. And then there are like two PCBs in it with like lots of components, flash, but also some other, active components. Yeah, they're actually quite expensive. And our game, for instance, if you look at our website, I would need to look at current currency exchange, but it's like $400 US for like a Neo Geo game. And not everybody can afford that, right? And obviously, like the more people that get to play the games that we're putting out, the better. So we even though we are now going to all these other platforms, we are always going to be Neo Geo first. So that's not going to be changed. Neo Geo first also doesn't mean that, okay, like we artificially delay the other versions. Overserve, for instance, will come out to all the 14 plus systems at the same time, pretty much. But in terms of development, like those games, the base of it is always like the Neo Geo game, even though every port is native. So we are not emulating the Neo Geo on iOS or on Dreamcast, or like that wouldn't even be feasible. You can't like efficiently at least emulate like a Neo Geo on a N64 or Saturn. It's possible with hacks to some degree, but yeah, not like in full fidelity. So yeah, just making it more accessible. And then obviously, a lot of people think like when you put out Neo Geo games and they see, okay, they seem to sell quite well, like they just see basically what you charge for them, and then they try to figure out like, oh, how many copies you've sold, and then I think, oh wow, that's a lot of money. But it's also super expensive to actually do. So a lot of people did like really good Neo Geo games. The very first ones that actually did Neo Geo games back then was NG Dev Team, and then they stopped doing it, and everybody was like, oh my goodness, they made so much money with it, right? Like, why did they stop? But the reality is that it's just super involved and super expensive to do it, and that's why it's not that easy to make it sustainable. I'm not saying you can't make it profitable just doing like Neo Geo games, but again, you also, why wouldn't you make it more available to more people, right? And you might also think that now that we put out these games for like on iOS or on the App Store, for instance, for I think it's $20 or something. So you still pay more than like your regular iOS game, but you're also not the product. You actually buy a game. You're not becoming the product, basically. And yeah, so, and that's why, yeah, bringing it to all these different systems also obviously brings like in more revenue, and it's not cannibalizing the Neo Geo sales. Like I was not really afraid of that, happening, like, because I thought it would not happen, but it's actually boosting the Neo Geo sales as well. If I look into like our sales over the last couple of weeks while we were like putting out all these digital releases now, or like the modern releases, they also come out in physical form in 2027 for Switch, PlayStation and Xbox. But yeah, what I'm trying to say is like our Xbox, Neo Geo games, sold even better, and the N64 ones and so on, while, yeah, we were rolling out to digital platforms, because like it just makes the word go around, right? And a lot of people still haven't heard about it, about us. So, yeah, it's basically a win-win-win.
Are there any platforms that you're not releasing on that you really want to release on? Like, can we see Project Neon Pocket or Project Neon Advance or Virtual mm-hmm. Project Neon?
Yeah. So let's go in that order. So Pocket obviously would be like a little bit of did you say Pocket or Playdate? What did you say?
Pocket,
sorry, what
like was the first one? Like Game Boy, like original Game Boy.
Okay, just in general Pocket. Okay, yeah. Game Boy Advance, I would say, might be possible. Yeah, would likely be possible. Not at the top of the priority list right now, but definitely something that I would eventually look at. I think like another game, which like the base version of that was like a Mega Drive game, Xenocrisis. I think they mm-hmm. shipped something on the GBA, and the GBA is actually quite powerful. It's quite a marvel. So definitely feasible. So right now, all the target platforms basically are like, they are like Neo Geo level or higher. They're basically, they came after the Neo Geo. The Dreamcast came after the Neo Geo. The Saturn, like the N64, they all came after the Neo Geo. And also the N64, a lot of people don't know, because it was like obviously targeted and like marketed for like 3D games. But it's also quite a 2D power house. So, yeah. I think the answer to your question is like, if we would go to platforms that are not as powerful of a Neo Geo, then we would need to do additional work for making them work, right? So basically see if we can still have the same fidelity in terms of colors or sprites on the screen, and it would change the game a little bit. Right now, all the games again are like native ports, and they are Neo Geo or better, right? All the time, and in terms of like, I mean, if you play on like a modern, like let's say on like an iPad or on a Steam Deck or on a PS5, it doesn't have any problems with running the game, especially because it's a native port and not emulated. So,
I also appreciate the fact that the game is kind of like two games in one, in that you can have the standard Yoko mode where it's a horizontal yeah. game, or you can switch it to Tate mode and have it yeah. as a vertical shmup in multiple ways, to the point where on my PC, I just recently turned one of my monitors on its side so I could play pinball games on there, and I'm going to end up playing this on there.
Yes. That's also the original version. So if you look at the artwork, you might have noticed if it's actually running in horizontal mode, you will see that the font, obviously, we turned around. Some sprites, like the power ups, right? They have like a B on it or like a W for like a wide shot or M for a main shot. And you will see that they are like readable, right? But you also notice that in the background, it, like when you play it horizontally, you notice it's a little bit odd because it was actually designed to be a Tati shoot 'em up, right? A vertical shoot 'em up. But it still feels quite, if you have never played it that way, because we made the controls work and the font work and some sprites we rotated, it's, as you said, it almost feels like a different game. But it's still the same game. So we didn't adjust like anything gameplay wise. And the main reason actually came actually into play already before we did all the ports, because the Neo Geo usually was hosted in like a Neo Geo cap, like in the big red cabinets, right? There were also candy cabinets, but like in the US especially, right? The Neo Geo was usually in like a big red cabinet. And they all have horizontal monitors and you can't rotate them. And often they also allow you to co-locate multiple games. So basically there is even a six slot Neo Geo where you can put in like six games at the same time, where when you put in a coin, you will actually be able to choose one of like six games. And because a lot of people still have their Neo Geo in such a setup, we put the game out for Neo Geo. Like I wanted to make sure that we accommodate for those players as well. And that's why we invested the extra time to actually make that work, because the Neo Geo can push a lot of sprites, but it can't shrinking it. So all the rotation is not happening in the system. We actually had to store all these assets that basically we turned 90 degrees to make this work. We had to store them twice because, yeah, the Neo Geo is not able to actually rotate a sprite, which sounds ridiculous, but that's the truth, basically. You also can't zoom a sprite, you can just shrink it. Wow. So if you want to zoom something, you just need to basically make it bigger, put it bigger as the sprite data, and then when you have it non-zoomed, then you just need to scale it down, and then when you want to have it zoomed, then you make it 100%, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's a little bit inverted.
That's really interesting. I'm learning stuff on this episode. It's not often that we get someone on talking Neo Geo development, so this is,
yeah, I hope this is not too overwhelming. Like this can also be quite exhausting to
me. I love like this. I want to talk more about the game a little bit. You are mean for having a one credit clear achievement in this game, because I will never get that in my life.
What was that? If we have what?
The one credit clear achievement. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm not good enough.
Some people actually figured out. So they are like these trophy hunters that I knew they existed, but now like,
they're all in our chat.
Saw them out in the wild. So they're like people on, especially Xbox that are looking at like pretty much every game and looking like the trophies and working on unlocking them, just to have more, gaining more, like Xbox score basically. And somebody figured out a way, which I was aware of. But I haven't really thought about in the context of trophies. And so somebody found like basically a way where you can trick the game in believing that you're still on your first coin. It's basically when you play with two players, as long as one player stays alive, it's not being considered that you're on a new credit. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's like really hard to make a decision then when are you actually on a new credit? Because people can also like, your second player can just join in mid game, right? So let's just say you start with two players and the first player dies or the second player dies. Would you now consider it already or lost all their lives? Would you now already consider that this is like a, you know, like not the first credit anymore? Or would you then, if they didn't rejoin with a coin and then the first player goes away? Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's maybe not that easy, even though it's quite simple, but like talking about it might not be as simple to understand. But you won't believe it. There are already videos on YouTube on how to achieve this. So they went like right ahead after they figured this out. So somebody basically discovered this.
Carnage in chat is one of them.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So Carnage, I think he did the video, right? And the other guy was something with Rain. You can look it up. Sorry, I can also do that. Yeah. Like, I don't want to miscredit anyone. But yeah, so they figured that out, which is like, again, totally fair, right? I mean, I feel like, especially you play for yourself, right? And you, by the way, you don't need a cheat to play through the game, right? So you can coin feed, but you wouldn't get, which is also, I think you noticed my username on Discord. So I'm just setting expectations in terms of, now if you want to ask me basically how good I am at this game or at other shmups, like I set some expectation before we even talked. So yeah, you can coin feed on the modern platforms. So you can play to the end. And the people that actually really want to take on the challenge are like, especially people from the shmup community or from the shoot 'em up community, they just let the continue timer pass and then they just start over again. They just ignore the fact that they can resume because they basically consider the game done whenever they lost all their lives from their first credit.
There are some insane shmup players out there that can do the craziest stuff in these games, and I watch videos and I sit with my jaw open like, how? Why can't I do this? Why do I suck so much?
So
talking about suck, I think like just people just like invest like a lot of time and training. So there's actually one CC of Project Neon on YouTube as well from Jamers, who also holds like a lot of world records in like shoot 'em ups, and he basically picks up pretty much any game that comes out of Steam, it feels like. If you don't put it out on Steam, just send him a Neo Geo system like I did. So you can have a look on how you can play through the game, actually not just on one credit, but without losing a single ship.
Jeez.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on people streaming or making videos of their gameplay of your game? Is that something you even consider at a point during development? Like, I know there's an element of playtesting and quality assurance you probably went through where your product had contact with the user and things were suddenly different than maybe your development views. But how about other people? Like, once it goes out into the wild, do you watch that kind of footage to get opinions, or is that like a bad mental place to be?
No, 100%. I'm not one of the guys that say like, oh, like users or players don't really know what they want, yada, yada, yada. I'm opinionated, but like, I'm still trying to learn what we can do better. Right. And if it's not like completely contradicting what I believe is like a fun game to play, then I'm always considering what people bring up. So I'm like pretty much 16 hours a day. I'm not just like producing stuff, but like I'm also consuming. But basically, it's a loop, right? So you put stuff out there, and then like I look at how people are playing it, how it's being perceived, what people like, what people don't like, and then that's the best case, right? Like if you can actually see, like a lot of people put out products in like industries where they really need to force it somehow to see how their product is actually being used. But if people like stream the game or put out recordings or talk about them in public forums, you can learn a lot about like the, and you don't need to act on it if you don't want to, right? But you can still learn and you can still consider the feedback. And I'm always trying to listen to that and also to give people as much bang for their buck as possible. That's like why also like, yeah, I mean, we have updatable cartridges. That should already tell you a little bit about my thought process, right?
Because I have another question then too. So
yeah, you go.
My husband was watching me play a little bit, and his question was, have you thought about an endless mode for more replay value or something along those lines?
So basically like a second loop where you like when you play through the game that you play through it again or?
Yeah, something like that.
So like some shmups have that where like basically it's called then a two all when people through that play through that, and then the second time actually like there's something different about the game, usually it becomes harder. So yeah, definitely. Right now it's like a little bit of a non-goal as soon as we see that people basically exhaust it. We might not add it to Project Neon, like to the first one, right? But we might then just consider it in a sequel. Because now we have like all this foundation for building like a, I would say what is like quite a reasonable good shoot 'em up. Like if you look at the reviews on Xbox, I think we're like, for like a 16-bit game, we have like a rating of like 4.3 out of 5. So people seem to be quite happy. And yeah, if we ever see that, like we exhaust that and like more pro players and the shmup community is more embracing, playing our games, then we will certainly, and never say never, right? So like, again, we're still putting out updates, to Project Neon. It's just like not very high on the list right now.
Fair.
You know what I mean?
Fair.
Yeah.
What is next for your studio? Do you have new games in the works? Or are you just focused on physical production?
That's I could give you a very, not long-winded, but like a very long answer and a very short answer on that.
Long answer, always long answer.
Oh, God. I'm always afraid, like, just the people are get like, okay. So the like I quite frequently get the question on what's the next game, even though Overserved is not even out there. And Project Neon was like really, because shoot 'em ups is my favorite genre for multiple reasons, but like yeah, there's just something to them that makes them really addictive to me. And so that's my primary genre, but another game that I like really, 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 really love is like Saturn Bomberman. So I love Bomberman, and I also love like all the different versions of Bomberman and the one of the on the PC Engine, or the ones and the pretty much every other system. But Saturn Bomberman is like really a favorite of mine. And that's how I got to the second game, right? Or the idea of the second game, because Overserved, we haven't talked about much yet, but it's basically like an open arena shooter, like Smash TV meets Saturn Bomberman, basically. It's like eight little critters having a food fight. So it's really family friendly. So that was the second game that I wanted to build, and it just came naturally. And if people ask you what's your next game and you didn't like, you haven't even shipped the last one, you're not thinking too much of the next one, right? Sure, I had ideas, but, and there are also like things that I would never work on just because I don't think I could like deliver a good result. I played through all the beat 'em ups that are out there basically, and I played them on original hardware as well, like fabulous ones on the CPS2 and whatnot, but I'm not really a beat 'em up fan. Like I'm not, you know what I mean? And I could not deliver. I think I would need to force myself like really to deliver like on a promise of doing like a beat 'em up. So that's why, yeah, it's not necessarily going to be demand driven, the kind of game that we're going to work on, let's put it like this. But there recently was a discussion or like at least something which popped up more than once in my head, and then also people suggested doing that, which is, should I actually mention that, it's a top-down racer basically. So that's one idea. We haven't started working on that, but we also have a multi-tap for the Neo Geo now. So usually you can only connect two controllers. Now with our Neo Tap, with our tap, basically that Furtek designed for us, we can connect up to two to them. So we can have eight players, which we already use for Overserved. And I'm not sure if like a top-down racer with eight players actually is like a lot of fun still. I mean, Micro Machines supported quite a lot of players and that worked out. I spilled the beans, I believe, but again, it's not even something that we started working on. It's just like an idea that's floating around. So there are also no guarantees that this is coming.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Overserved is the top priority, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And the new, like obviously all the modern stuff is pretty much ticked now, right? So all the mobile platforms, modern consoles, Windows, Mac, Linux, like all that. So the other announced platforms are N64, Saturn, and Dreamcast. Just getting these right, not just for the new game, for Overserved, but also for Project Neon, is our focus, I would say. So Overserved and those three newly announced platforms. By the way, you asked earlier why, maybe you didn't ask on why cartridge, but like we need the Wi-Fi in our cartridges to actually make this work really, really nice. There are ways where you can hook up your Dreamcast, your Saturn, your Dreamcast you can actually do natively. There's like a network adapter and like a modem, and it's actually kind of okay. And we will piggyback on that because for the Dreamcast, we don't have a cartridge. But for the Saturn, we needed the Wi-Fi on the cartridge, and the same goes for like the N64. And that's the reason why we have a cartridge for the Saturn. Plus, I mentioned that we always try to get more bang for the buck for our users. So we're also looking in providing even value by having a cartridge on the Sega Saturn. Let's put it like this.
That's really cool. I was kind of wondering how the online would work with the Dreamcast, considering it's not a disc. And then I remembered, oh yeah, it was just an online console to begin with. Duh.
Yes, it was.
Phantasy Star Online jam.
It has a disc, right? But it doesn't. But it also has a broadband adapter or like a modem that you can use. And that's what we're going to piggyback. So you would basically need that module in that case when you buy the Dreamcast version, because the Dreamcast version comes on disc. There's no extension point on the console as well. There's an extension point on your gamepad extension port, right? Where you can put in a VMU, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say it's impossible to use that. It's actually, the more I think about it, it's quite feasible. But you should buy your broadband adapter, by the way, today. If you plan to get Overserved for Dreamcast, then buy your broadband. And I don't, like, if you buy it on eBay, I don't have like any, right, like incentive of saying that, just for the sake of like, yeah, you should get one now, because if this is going to work and like a lot of people are going to play this on the Dreamcast, then there's a whole new incentive to chase down one of these adapters if you don't have one.
Yeah, because those were dial-up standard. The broadband was a separate purchase.
Yep. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Ooh. Oh, man. All right. So when you're not working on your own games, what are you playing yourself?
Shoot 'em ups, mostly.
So what are some of your favorite shmups from the 16-bit era or modernly?
Oh, wow. So from the 16-bit era, I mean, like... pretty much all the raising or rising games, so Bad Rider, Battle Gorega, like pretty much everything from Rising. Then there's obviously Toa Plan, and then Cave, right? That's the great thing, right? There are like a lot of like really good shoot 'em ups out there. I would say. I enjoy games like from Psycho, for instance, and also from like compile and whatnot, but I would say, yeah, mostly Rising, Cave, Tor Plan, I would say would be the top three. And then in between that and like other studios or publishers or developers, I would say it's indie, like the indie shmup. So Devil Blade was recently released. Not recently, it's now a while ago. I really enjoy that. I played it on my Steam Deck. But also on the 68,000, on the Sharp 68,000, there's Chorin Sha, which I also took quite some, or we took quite some inspiration from for Project Neon as well. So there are some elements that you might think you saw before. Yeah. That's I also enjoy story games, but I don't have that much time, so I'm like kind of limited on the amount that I can pick up there. So I think I play like one or two each year. And I also recently got more into like rhythm games, so I got myself treat myself with like a waka.
All right.
If that, like these things that look like a washing machine.
Oh,
I have. Is that an arcade machine?
Have you seen them before? Like, it's like a W-A-C-C-A, Waka. Waka Reverse, basically, was the final one. But that's a whole different conversation topic.
Now I'm looking these up because I'm pretty sure they had these. I go to a convention called MagFest, and they have...
Yes. They had them at MagFest. They had them at Too Many Games. Yes. Uh-huh.
Have you been to MagFest?
No, but I'm planning to.
Oh, very nice.
There are like a lot of people that try to convince me going there. The first like really convention that I went to was Too Many Games about, what is it now, like over months ago. So, yeah,
you were there this year?
To Philadelphia. What is that?
You were there this year?
Yes.
Son of a bitch, I could have met you.
How could you miss us? There was like I basically had two booths right next to each other.
I was there helping another friend run their booth because his team couldn't make it. And then the second day I was there, I had to leave because of a family emergency. So I had so little time there.
Yeah. Okay. That's unfortunate.
Like, yeah. I was bummed. I was having a really good time. That thing was awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. I was actually there on my own, so I had some very good neighbors that at least when I wanted to quickly eat something or I had to run to the toilet, they took over. But I was clocking in like... So basically, we had two arcade machines there with basically like a Big Red with Project Neon in horizontal mode or in Yoko. And then we also had a special build with updated graphics from an ex-SNK artist. But the main thing basically was Overserve. Basically, we had an eight-player setup there on like a big 65-inch display. And I also organized like a team tournament, basically. And yeah, so I think I clocked in like, I don't know how many hours on Steam, playing Overserved, obviously like the internal build, right? It's not out there yet. But you can look up Overserved and also Project Neon on Steam. And Project Neon is out now, and Overserved you can obviously wishlist. So, but yeah, like I played a lot, and I played with so many different folks, and I also played like with a lot of kids and families, and the feedback was like, what makes it all worth it, right? Like, yeah. So that was exciting. So I will be at more conventions and MagFest early next year, I think, right?
January.
Like, one is. Yeah, so I'm going there. Tokyo Game Show is coming up. I'm currently in Germany, so I'm going to Gamescom, which is going to be insane. But I think Tokyo Game Show is going to be especially insane this year. So yeah, I'm like really, really looking forward on going there.
Very cool. Yeah, if you go to MagFest, hit me up because I have missed a MagFest.
Yeah.
I've been to all 23 of them.
I missed them all.
See, we're even. I covered for you.
Thank you very much.
For what you didn't get to. Yeah, well, yeah, if you're at MAGFest, hit me up. We'll grab a drink. I could introduce you to some people down there. I know way too many of the bands and too many of the people in the bands. I love MAGFest. It's my
way
one
too much
thing
time
every
there
year.
Already in the past. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's my second home, basically.
Yeah. That's a good home to have.
I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I mean, how much time do we have? Like, I don't know.
Probably about 15 minutes. We have another interview at the top of the hour that we have to prepare for as well. And then in show terms, we have more show to take care of, folks.
Yeah, nice. I think one thing is, if you are into developing for any of the systems, especially like if you're like developing for retro systems right now, and you could use some help, like I'm always reachable, right? So if anybody has questions on how to do certain things on any of these platforms, just hit me up. And then there's like also for like the modern systems, so behind the scenes there's like a lot of stuff with like a steep learning curve. As soon as you can prove to me that you're also under NDA, we can talk. I can help you out. Related to that, like we invested like a lot into like our cartridges, right? So basically being able to distribute our games in physical form for these systems. Then the added capabilities of online play and the multi-tap for the Neo Geo, and so on and so on. And actually being able to develop one game and then have it on like 14 plus different systems. If this is your jam and you're already working on something, or you feel like, well, I can write a little bit of C code, and you have something, like, yeah, hit me up for help. But I think what I'm trying to say is I want to make this accessible to more people. I went through like since 2019 to like a lot of like different challenges, and now it's all there. So why should others go through the whole pain over and over again? So I think what I'm trying to say is that we're looking into making our platform accessible to others for developing games for these 14 plus systems and also distributing them. And that's all that I can say to that in terms of the detail of it. But yeah, that's the gist basically. So if that's your thing, hit me up. Hopefully I'm not opening like a big box here. Work on anything myself anymore, but well, that's still a good challenge to have. So like I rather have more conversations than less, right? So yeah.
So where can people putting keep up that out to date there with you and get in touch with you?
Mainly, and I know like a lot of people left, but the most convenient way for me to post things is usually still on X. But I'm also going to do much more just cross posting. So they're also like, there's a full set account on Blue Sky. There's one on Mastodon. There is one on Instagram, on Threads, like everywhere. But they get like, I would say 5% of the posts right now. Yeah. And I need to change that up. So right now, if you want it all, on the daily, then basically on X you will see multiple posts. If you just want it occasionally, then go to the other platforms, but it's going to change there as well, so there's going to be more content to be posted there, and it's basically the same content there as well then. But right now, yeah, I would say the latest and greatest stuff is basically being posted on X right now.
Very good.
That's also where most of like the we have most of our following right now, I would say.
Yeah, we left that site behind. We're on Blue Sky now, so we'll be sure to tag you on there. Aki, do you have any final questions you want to ask?
No, I'm good. My brain melted a while ago at this point.
That's fair.
It's been a lot of information, and I can only handle so much of it before I'm like,
You're a damsel flower, we know.
I warned you. But it happens to me too. Like when while I'm like sharing this and talking about this with like the enthusiasm and like I just like I can be pretty exhausted even though it was me basically putting out all these ramblings, right? So I feel you. I understand you. That's why I want you. Like it's not that we didn't put out a disclaimer at the beginning. You were likely thinking of why is he even mentioning that? Like, but well, now you know.
Well, on top of that, you know, I kept asking for all the long answers. So, you know, yeah, I did this fault. To myself.
Yeah.
Quite on purpose.
Bree, any final questions on your end, Bree?
I've got two. One is quick. What's your favorite boss or stage of the game?
Oh, the favorite boss. Oh, sorry, there's an alarm going off in the back, which is funny because often in shoot 'em ups, there's an alarm ringing when there's a boss approaching.
Yeah.
So please ignore the beeping if you can hear it. Maybe it's noise cancellated. So my favorite boss in Project Neon, the owl. Like, that's not even a question. Least favorite is the frog, but also other people told me that they enjoy the frog the most, which I tolerate.
Yeah, the frog was a challenge. Yeah. The owl was my favorite. So my second question is a little bit more complicated to ask. It takes place in 2042, and like people of the 1960s through the 1980s, we had some high impressions of where we'd be in terms of technology and interplanetary travel. Like, I get that that's part of the retro theme here, and I'm not picking at that. But I'm curious your thoughts on where we are in comparison to where we thought we'd be. Are you concerned that in less than 20 years we're going to be facing severe problems of drought and the like, or were you just writing a story?
Oh, wow. That's a little question.
Wow. Bree always comes in. I have 20 minutes.
I have more
questions.
I hope
you can tell from this
one.
Conversation that I'm generally like an optimist, right? So I'm not just like saying it's all screwed and, you know, but I think there are like, I think like we need to not just watch things, but like act, right? Pretty sure, like even if it's not as severe, like we're leaving a mark, right? And so just being conscious about that. And also, I started the game in 2019, and I'm not fully sure, like people like fully got the whole story, but like I wouldn't have written the same story basically today for like. Different reasons, which might just click later. But I'm generally, I hope it's not going to be like this in 2042 because like I also have two kids and I wouldn't want them to basically live like a Dune life, right?
Right.
I think my answer is, I think like just being like a little bit more conscious and like just, not going into a denial about the situation is a good thing.
That's
right.
Fair.
And then how we get there, I think we all have like different opinions on like what can have like a positive impact. But yeah, it's more like to provoke a little bit like the thought, I would say. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't think too much about it when I put it out there. It wasn't like, oh, I need to deliver a message here. Right. So,
fair.
That certainly wasn't my thinking there.
All right.
All right. Last question I have is, for being a company so focused on physical goods, what are your thoughts on Sony looking to end disc production?
There's still an advantage in buying disc, right? But I think the moment we basically got online updates and day one patches, like they lost like a lot of the appeal because I'm partners now officially with all of them, so I will be careful what I'm saying here, but the thing is that like the game that you get on the disc is obviously like not the same game after a couple of updates, right? Like there are going to be bugs to be fixed, new content to be added, and so on and so on. So, and in the context of preservation, like if your system dies and these games are not hosted anymore, like the updates are not hosted anymore, and you are not the one who's figuring out to still get access to these updates, and you put in the disks and like your system dies and you need to get a new system, like the version that's on the disk is not the version that you played, if that makes sense. So that's why I'm like, I don't like it. But for me, physical, like before updates, I would say, yes, I consider CDs almost equal to cartridges, but like, yeah, I'm like for me, physical, like real physical for me is cartridges and CDs for the first couple of years while you didn't have the abilities to also get updates for them. Or at least while you were still be able to download them yourselves and store them yourselves and preserve yourself, right? Like yeah. We still can do on PC today, but we can't do on like, well, maybe also not all the time anymore, depending on DIM and where you bought them. But I think you get what I'm saying. So yeah, that's why I think like there was already a degradation like years ago in terms of what it meant to buy a game physically. And I would still, obviously, if I would be able to put in my vote, I would say like keep the disc, right? And a lot of people are also quite passionate about it. And yeah, I mean, if you buy the game, like you should own the game. I believe in ownership of games. Yeah. So like maybe to end on this, I know you need to do your other conversations as well, but I will always make sure that people for our games, because like the game that you're going to have on the cartridge, well, it's going to stay there and you don't have like, if the cartridge dies, well, then you have like another problem. But I think what I'm trying to say, all the versions that are ever, that we ever put out for any of the games, for the cartridges that you have, you will be able to store. So even if you can't update via Wi-Fi in like 30 years from here anymore, because I don't know, I got hit by a bus or whatever, you will be able to keep backups of your update files and you will just be able to drop them via USB-C, which is already possible today. Very so cool. You will be able to archive the update files for your cartridge. And should we allow you to buy other games for the cartridges that you have in the future, you will be able to do the same.
Awesome. And let's be honest, real collectors, real physical collectors have a washing machine sized arcade machines in their home.
At least one.
Yeah. Sasha, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show chatting. One more time, give us the name of the game, where people could get it, how much it costs. Give us all the info.
Project Neon. You can get it on Steam. You can get it on PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. You can get it on the App Store. You will soon be able to get it for your Android phone as well on Google Play. And then you will be able to get it for Dreamcast, Saturn, and N64 in November by going to fullset.io, where you can buy all things physical, including a new batch of Neo Geo versions of Project Neon. And all that I just said is true for Overserved as well. You can find them in the same places, but that's going to be released in November, while Project Neon for most of the systems is already out there.
Very good. It sounds like November would be a good time to get you back on to talk about Overserved.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All yeah. right. Let's make a date. Sasha, has been fantastic having you on. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Purnell's got some reviews he's got to take care of, so we're going to be doing that. Stick around. Sasha, do you have any final words to end the interview?
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Sasha Fullset for coming on and chatting with us about all the cool things they are doing with Neo Geo carts and Saturn carts and Dreamcast discs and Project Neon. And man, that blows my mind. Did you know you can put a Wi-Fi chip in a Saturn cartridge?
I did not. Why would you do that?
To play an online game.
See, my memory doesn't even remember Saturn games online.
Exactly. They're new games. They're new games.
Weird. Yeah. I love my Saturn, despite the battery being absolute shit, but I would have never expected something like that, even out of the fans of it. But I might have to go back and listen to that interview.
Check out fullset.io. They have Project Neon, and there was another game, like an 8-player party game that they are releasing on N64, Dreamcast, Saturn, and Neo Geo. N64 online. Because there's Wi-Fi built into the cartridge.
Freaking bonkers.
It's nuts what these guys are doing.
Now you can play 8-player Bomberman 64. I wish.
Oh, man, I wish. They created multi-taps for the Neo Geo so you could make 8-player games on Neo Geo.
Oh, you're saying like the company produced multi-taps for it?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. And I know people that own Neo Geo. But,
crazy stuff. You would love that interview. You should go back and check it out. We do have more show to take care of. And with that, Pernell Vaughn is here. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Had a good board game evening. Got some new attendees. It's always small, but not too small. It's like that cozy amount of attendees. So I'm happy it's going on.
Aki is still here, hanging out from the interview. Aki, how are you?
Pretty good. And you?
Good. I did some cool stuff on my computer that we could talk about in a few minutes. But we also have our good friend Matt PA joining us. Matt, how are you?
I'm fine. As fine as I can be. As my body deteriorates into dust in the wind.
Did you injure yourself more?
Oh, yeah. I burned my hand lifting a fire pit lid that I didn't realize was scalding hot.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
And then I cut my hand open at work on a pair of scissors. Trying to
that
take
does
something
not
out
sound
of
good.
Dude, we got to wrap you in bubble wrap.
Good. Nah.
Here I was all like, are you ready to laugh? And now he's like, oh, I burned my hand and shit.
I'm crippled.
I take it back.
Holy crap, he's a crapple.
Well, you can't hurt yourself doing a podcast, can you?
We'll see, man. I managed to fucking almost break my leg eating crabs, so who knows? Anything's possible.
Never mind. I'm not even. Nope.
No, it's not about you.
How the fuck did you manage to break your goddamn leg eating shrimp? What the?
It was crabs.
Crabs, whatever.
That doesn't make
still,
it better.
How the fuck?
Anyway.
So I says to Mabel, I says, this guy broke his leg eating crabs.
Oh, man. So I did something cool with my computer over the weekend. I decided that I wasn't using the 2 terabyte SSD that I had in my PS5, and I wanted to put it in my computer because I'm always struggling for space with my 512 SSD in my computer. I found a USB hub that I could put the drive in. I found some cloning software that allowed me to copy my boot drive and all the Windows data from one to the other. And then I was going to get my one friend to help me put the SSD in, but then I realized I just did a straight clone of my drive. If I do literally anything else on my PC, I lose that. So I have to exchange it now. So unhooked it, cracked it open, and I'm a computer idiot, so I barely know what the hell I'm doing. The only thing I remembered him saying was that my video card was in the way. So I unscrewed that, popped it out, and I saw right there, it was just hidden perfectly behind the video card, unscrewed it, popped the old one out, new one in, screwed it back in, put the video card back in, and I didn't break anything. It works.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Congratulations.
I had tried that. I had a broken so much money's worth of shit.
I know. I thought I was going to.
Which means, Aki, now you have to try.
Oh, fuck that. No. I don't have the money. One, I don't have the money to replace any of that stuff. And two, I am blind. There is no way in fuck I am going to tempt fate. No. I will bring it to like Best Buy or something and say, hey, bitches, put this in and leave it at that. Wait, fuck
blind?
That.
You play video games. How are you blind?
There's levels of blindness, Purnell. You know how you wear glasses?
How'd you break your leg eating crabs?
No one owes you anything. That is
a much better question. Yeah.
Are you being interrogated here?
Yes, you are. Now it's so hard.
The harbor waves were crashing against the vessel.
Oh, Jesus. I just think he was trying to break open crabs by putting them behind his knee and bending, trying to break them.
No, he's on a skateboard doing kickflips onto the crab to crack it open. Pulled the trick wrong.
That would be so much more embarrassing.
Fell down a flight of steps like Darby Allin.
But eating crabs, I mean, I was engaging in hand-to-hand combat with the crabs.
Oh. Man found a way. Found a way to crabs and injuries from said crabs.
Oh man, Neo Geo and crab people. That's,
you almost should make that the name of the damn episode. So I broke my leg eating crab.
Now I have to have something about the interview in the title.
And then I listened to an interview. There it is, covered.
Critical condition, eating crab.
Good lord, this guy. He's like, it's all for the lulz. It was worth it. That's probably why he did it. He's like, what can I do to make for a hilarious story that I'll never tell? I got it. I can
tell
my
story.
Life eating crabs.
Wait, God damn it. I was eating crabs. I was sitting in a chair and I went to stand up, and that was all she wrote. All right? That's life. It's life.
So you broke your leg trying to stand up, as you're telling us. It's even worse.
Yes, it is, but it's not as absurd as eating crabs.
That's what I was doing at the time. You guys are really hung up on all the wrong details of the story.
I work with data analytics. Nuance is the point. I gotta understand when someone says something like "I broke my leg eating crabs." I can't just
think it's funny.
I said almost number one.
Yeah.
Close enough. You know, almost. You don't do anything between those two things in any degree of potential success.
My leg's not broken, so.
I came this close to breaking my leg while drinking a soda.
Standing up.
That would make sense, though. That I can literally see. It totally does. You could stand up the wrong way and smack your leg into something, and boom, your bone goes popping backwards out your butt. Done. Now you got a broken leg. How'd it happen?
Now you
stand
got a
it up.
Bony ass. Look at
you. Got
you.
A bony ass. Exactly. See, that could be done. That could be done.
I'll try.
But if I were to say, you know, I put my eye out while, I don't know, that's a hard one because you can this. I put my eye out while drinking a soda.
By farting.
Even still. By farting. Actually, good. Perfect. I put my
that makes
eye
as
out
much sense as
farting.
I almost broke my leg eating crab. Yeah.
I was pushing a bit too hard and the eyeball just went. And
You ever see those cartoons where the guy's eye pops out of his socket and it's usually because of some weird space pressure shit? Well, mine was because of actual shit.
That's highly probable. I mean, Elvis died shitting. A lot of kid stuff can happen to you while you're shitting.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he was shitting peanut butter and banana sandwiches. His body just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, he hadn't crapped for like a week or something, or 2 weeks, or some shit like that.
Notice
good.
How you no
got,
one ever brings that up on his biopsy.
Stay regular. Have fiber, people.
Yeah.
No one ever brings that up during the freaking Elvis impersonator shows. Like, the king is out tonight. Good night, everybody. Remember, take your fiber.
Yeah, they really ought to. Because that's why he died. He strained so much, he gave himself a fucking heart attack.
That's literally how he died. He died shitting. Like, I thought you were kidding.
He died trying to shit.
Yowza.
Yeah, I think it was like almost 14 days or something where he hadn't crapped.
Hunk of burning anus.
Yeah, oh God.
Speaking like a man who's never had an anal fissure.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was a good one, but yes, I agree. I did not. It's friggin' shit. Oh, mercy. See, I learn something new every day, that Elvis died taking a shit and failing at it.
I knew he died on the toilet trying to poop, but I didn't realize why. Jacob actually taught me that fact, and he had me go look it up for proof, and I did. Yeah.
See, now I need to confirm the anti-diuretics. Now I got to confirm the anti-diuretics didn't exist at that time, because at least that part would make sense.
How did I know that a story involving shitting would eventually lead to Jacob being involved?
God,
that's his bread and butter. That's why. Yeah,
I knew one of you was going to make a comment about butter connections.
Doo doo butter,
doo doo brown. But yeah, we like.
So that. Speaking of shit, should we get to some reviews?
Hey, I think I may have played a good game this month.
No, we got some good games coming up. No, you don't like it?
I did not enjoy it.
Let's begin.
should we kick things off?
Sure. Yeah,
sure.
All right, let's get this going. First game to talk about tonight is called Omen, developed and published by Codex Interactive. It released August 11th on Steam for $11.99. Infiltrate the remnants of a fallen empire, extract valuable loot, establish defenses against hostile fanatics, and unlock the gateway to a dimension of cosmic dread that defies comprehension. Matt, what is going on in Omen? Because that intro doesn't tell us much.
Well, I can't comprehend it, that's for sure.
Does tell us exactly what we need to know.
So it's like a zero G kind of like controls, like you're playing asteroid, like you never actually stop moving kind of thing. And the backgrounds are sort of just like things you fly over. Like there's all this stuff. There's a lot of there's too much stuff on the screen because I can't tell what's going on half the time. Like you don't, it's hard. I don't know. It's just hard to see stuff. And it has this filter, like a CRT filter on it that you can't turn off, that like curves the edge of the screen in weird ways. And like, I don't know. There's no hit detection. That is like the biggest problem for me, because Joe knows this, but I have UI blindness. Like I will like forget there's UI on the screen entirely and ignore it and have no idea what it's saying or doing. And in this game, you don't know you're taking damage until you're like at 25% health. And the screen looks a little different. It looks worse, actually, and becomes even harder to see stuff. So, like, oh, my God. And the way it works is, like, there's zones, and it seems like there's 3 to 4 areas in every zone. And as you, it's like an extraction game, kind of. You go into a zone, there's a bunch of nodes that are different, like, things, like vaults to hack to get blueprints, or you can ambush like cargo shipments and stuff to get certain resources. And every time you finish one of those, this counter goes down because you're like part of this group. You're protecting a tree in space that allows, like, they're trying to like explain why you can die and just come back. So it's sort of like Elden Ring in space. So, like, you die, and then this tree rebirths you, and you can go back out and do stuff. But every 3 extractions in a zone, you have to then defend the tree, which involves, like, building structures. There's a lot of crafting, because you have to collect all these components, and then you craft parts for your ship, and you craft structures to defend the tree. But this is where my problem came, where I couldn't beat the one boss that kept killing me, which means I lost all my stuff. So I then had to go back to the other levels and go through that whole cycle of going through multiple levels to get all the different resources I needed to rebuild all the parts of my ship that I just lost. And then inevitably, that takes long enough that you have to do a defend. And it seems like every time you do a defend, it gets harder. Everything gets harder. Like, the levels you go into start having higher alert levels, and more ships start showing up. And I died to that boss, like, 4 fucking times and spent, like, 2 hours of gathering resources just to rebuild shits to die in, like, 45 seconds. And then the game just got harder and harder and harder with me not getting any further. And I was just, like, not having a great time.
Damn.
Because it was such a like a difficulty spike, because like I was beating everything else. Like I'm not huge in resource collecting for crafting in games a lot. And I was like, oh, this is actually a decent pace of like collecting stuff and beating stuff when I wasn't dying in the same spot all the time. And then once that I got to that Northwind boss, and it was just like, this is the end of your adventure for you. I tried 4 times and I was just like, dude, I do not want to have to go through 3 levels in a defense again, just to try to fly in that, like to fly in there and die in 45 seconds. Like, no, because of the no hit detection thing, that boss takes up the whole screen. I can't tell when I'm taking damage, even though I have all these things to heal. The amount of times I died with an entire inventory of healing because I didn't realize I was taking damage until it was too late. It just happened so fucking fast. Some of the like damage times on some of the lasers is just like 0.01 seconds, dude. It would just be like, oh, I'm taking damage. Oh, I'm dead. Oh, okay. Sick.
I feel like that in like every Souls-like game I played, in that I take one hit and either I heal immediately or I'm dead.
I'm sorry you're kinda, so bad at those games.
It did kind of feel like a Souls situation where the run back in this case is having to grind out all these resources to just build a ship that gets fucking smashed. So it was just like not worth it for me. I didn't have a great time.
No.
The visuals of the game, it's so visually messy for me. I mean, I'm sure somebody might like this game a lot. And if you like these kind of floaty 3D, 360 kind of shooter games.
What would you do to improve it?
I feel like the zones should be leveled like progression. And that, like, that thing where everything just gets harder every time you have to go through the cycle and defend. That is what ruined it for me, because I was like, now I'm fighting really hard levels just to get a couple resources to rebuild like the better reactor, so I can have more energy to try to fight this stupid boss. Like that was that part of it. I just would not. I don't know. I did not like that. That was. It's like to lose more. It's like I'm not. I'm already not doing well, and having to redo these areas. Why are you making it harder for me to do that? Taking longer to do, like, to rebuild. I don't know. That's really what the roadblock to that made me want to not like it, because I was just like, dude, all I'm doing is trying to collect resources to build a ship, and it just keeps getting harder to do every time I did it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about price on this one. It clocks in at $11.99. What are your thoughts on Omen?
If you like really hard stuff and are like, I don't know. I don't know who this is for. It ain't for me. There's like too much crafting for a game with not that many things to craft. So you have to like build structures just to upgrade the resources instead of there being better resources to find. So you have to go back. That's like, it all just comes back to like having to redo those earlier levels, and the difficulty ramping up is like, it was just annoying as hell.
No.
It was just a grind. It was just this, if you aren't constantly winning. It's like this, like, escalatingly difficult grind to try to get further.
All right. Well, can't all be winners, I guess. Seems like this one had potential, but just too much going on can ruin anything. And lack of ability to turn off a CRT filter. Oh my god, I hate CRT filters so much.
They're not great. Oh.
All right, well, Matt, that is it for you. We will let you get going. Thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure having you on hanging out.
No, or you can stay for the occasional surprise laugh.
I have been at work, grocery store, cook dinner, eat dinner, clean up dinner, band practice. Now I'm talking. I had like 10 minutes before talking to you guys, and now I need to take out the trash, and then I'm going to collapse into a pile.
You're going to fight some thugs, huh?
No, I'm literally going to go roll a garbage can to my sidewalk, probably grab the mail, and then that'll be the end of my day.
And then he's going to fight some thugs.
If I get into a fight, it's your fault. That was one of my great. Just evil on me.
Local area man in hospital after taking out the trash.
Well, wish me luck, everybody.
Matt joins back in like 15 minutes. Oh, guess who just had to deal with 14 thugs in his back alley? Dropped coins.
I screamed.
But then we'll respond. But you take out the trash, and he'll go, "God damn right, I took out the trash."
I'm more worried about him trying to take out the trash and breaking his leg.
No!
Uncle Sharp will go, "Damn, he already did it to himself." Let's go. Whoa.
Zero crabs in the trash. 100%.
Why? Well, you know, you have to get up to go take the trash.
I do have to stand up. We'll see what happens. I took my brace off. My leg is liable to explode. All right.
Exactly.
Later,
man. To be fair, all jokes aside, I hope you do feel better sooner rather than later and that your leg mends up accordingly.
Oh, thank you very much. Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good one, see Matt. Oh, man. And the best part of all of that is we got a raid. Right while we were all chatting, so we had Matt screaming as Matt was talking. Welcome in, Trivium Champ and Raiders. Glad to have you in here. We just reviewed the game Omen, and we got 5 more games to talk about. Y'all ready to continue on? Aki, how's the weather? Are you good to stick around?
I'm good. No storms here.
Cool.
They did quit, so thank fuck.
All right. Let's talk about Montavi, developed by Mankibo, developed by Akupara Games. It released August 6th on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PC for $19.99. Tame, collect, fight, assemble an unstoppable team of unique Montavi in this creature collector roguelike deck builder. Wow, that's a lot of descriptors. Master their awesome abilities, synergize their strategic strengths, and save the city in tactical turn-based combat. Fernell, what is going on in Montavi?
Montavi is what I consider to be one of those surprise games that you didn't see coming a mile away, and you're glad it did, because, spoiler, just like when Matt said his review early on his time, this is a pretty cool game that I'm giving a bite, flat out, and I wanted to express that because any fumbling I do while describing it should not indicate that I think this game is not good, because it's great. The best way to describe this is kind of like how Joe described it. It is a tactical monster collector deck builder roguelike. And the way this is done is that at the beginning of a session, so to speak, you have to choose a trainer. Think like a Pokemon trainer. But they actually do something in the game aside from, you know, throwing balls and picking up balls. So
balls.
You choose a trainer, and each of these characters that you can choose from have specific properties, and more specifically, their decks play differently and are therefore providing a specific style of play for them. Afterwards, you will choose your starting Montavi. Think starting Pokemon. Though one exception to that concept off the gate, though, is that even though they have 3 that look like they represent various types of creature, there aren't any creature types in this game. There's no water type versus a grass type. It's just you want to take on this cool sentient water hydrant? Go for it. It's cool. But What does make these creatures stand out is that each of them has a specific play style, and all the cards that would go into their respective deck reflect that. So, going back to this statement, you choose your starting Montavi, and then you go to one of those Slay the Spire-esque maps that lets you choose directions to go in, and depending on where you go, you'll engage in battles, events, etc. The events are very typical things where you'll get a scenario that plays out and you'll be able to make a choice where you might have to sacrifice one thing to get a cool reward or basically just get a free thing, or actually that's pretty much it. That's generally how events work. Sacrifice to get or get a thing. And there's like vendors that let you buy things, which I'll talk about more about the sort of things you can buy later. But the main kit and caboodle in this game is the battling. And once you go to a battle node, you will be able to see on the map, by the way, unlike a lot of games like this, you'll see on the map specifically what creatures you will be battling if you choose to go to a battle node. And that matters for a reason I will also get into later. Choose a level, go onto the map, you will see rival Montavi, sometimes a rival trainer, on the right side, and you will be tasked with choosing who do you want on the field and where to place them. Your trainer always has to be on the field, and if your trainer gets knocked out, it's an instant game over. So don't let your trainer get knocked out. In addition, you can seed up to two Montavi on the board as well from your reserve pile. Once they are on the board and you're ready to go, boom, your game runs. Each character has their own AP or energy meter, which determines how many cards they can play. And they also each have their own decks of cards. So essentially, you're controlling three different characters at once, but they all kind of work together. What do I mean by that? Well, you might have a trainer card that will allow you to move a Montavi one space. And you might also have another Montavi that will allow someone else, whether it be the trainer or a Montavi, to draw additional cards or to get more energy. So, give you an easy example, and why this makes sense for like card character synergy, is that one of my favorite characters is one of the first ones I got to play as, who has multiple attacks that are built off of getting damage boosts or effect boosts, depending on how many cards they have in their hand. So I acquired additional Montavi later that would allow me to increase the size of their hand with little effort to make those cards always fire off with awesome results. It was fun. So this will happen. You'll basically be playing out a turn where you'll tell every Montavi what to do with their cards until they run out of AP. You'll also be able to see what the opposing team is going to do, so you can plan for that. When that's over, the opponent's going to attack. Try again. At the end of the day, you'll ultimately, hopefully, for your first battle, you will win. And when that occurs, if you have what is referred to as a Montavi biscuit in your inventory, you get the opportunity to take one of the monsters that you just battled and add it to your team. Just like Pokemon. Once you do, that character will come along. They will be in your reserve deck and be added to your party. They come with their own deck. And sometimes they'll come with free level ups to get the ball rolling. When the battle's over, you will earn level ups depending on what the game told you that battle would reward you. And you can spend them on either your trainer or your Montavi. Every time you level up, you will gain new cards for your deck. Sometimes they'll be passive abilities, which means they'll fire off and they'll just do their thing whenever the game says that they would do it. You'll get new attacks, you know, all sorts of cool types of cards, skills, and passives and the like. And in addition to that, for every five levels, you will evolve. The Montavi will evolve and the trainer will rank up. And that will lead to higher attack and defense stats, better cards that would only exist for that new evolution of character, and so on and so forth. You might find yourself saying, do I want to spread out my level ups to get my team on an even kilter? Or you might want to dump all your level ups into one Montavi to have one super powered guy supported by a bunch of weaker guys. Choice is yours. Whether it succeeds or not, I have no clue. I'm not the boss of you.
I'm looking at the Steam page at the 22 starters. There are some ridiculous Montavi in this game, like a goldfish in a bag with feet.
Yeah.
A lighter. A washing machine.
That was one of my favorites, by the way. The washing machine I comboed with the fire hydrant. They made a really good pair.
A catfish.
A traffic light.
Yeah, the traffic light is a pretty good one. A cactus with a shield.
A skateboarding monkey.
There are some pretty odd characters in this. This looks pretty fun.
And hopefully they end up adding more down the line. Some would say that there's like a balance issue that's currently in play where like certain players have been able to like completely cycle their decks and just keep the ball rolling and like have like super kills due to having really good synergy. Whether or not they decide to patch that out or not, I have no idea, because they were saying they're not sure if they want to, because they don't want to take away people discovering awesome combos. But even if they don't, one, you have to personally find those combos, and two, the game's still fun, I think. It just means you end up getting to a point where you overly master it. But the game was fun to play. The music is good. I like the art style, as Joe mentioned earlier, with all the different Montabi types that exist, and they all have evolutions to their line, so it doesn't... It's basically 22 times at least three. So that's pretty cool. I think this game is a lot of fun. I had it on my wish list before the review option came through. And I would have, if I knew it was going to be like this, I would have paid the money for it. It's that good. I think people that are interested in the freaking word salad of genres that we threw together at the beginning of this review have interest in any of those things. Well, I think this is worth a try, because to be frank, I can't think of too many other games that do this, that do the whole combination that's going on here. I mean, the closest thing I think of is probably like Bots and Kaitos, and that is different from this still, too.
Oh, wow. So, Bots and Kaitos is that's a shout out.
Oh, yeah. Ancient gaming. My back just cracked.
Since you said you would have paid for already, maybe you should just gift it to someone.
We don't know in this economy. I'll take the free one I can get it. Thank you. That's how I save money.
Well, it does clock in at $20. So what is your verdict on Montabi?
Definitely a buy it recommendation. I don't think you'll regret it.
Very good. Moving on, let's talk about Plungies, developed by Team Xeroth, published by Cubite Interactive. Released August 13th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $9.99. Plungies is a non-linear puzzle adventure set in a vast underground world. Explore an interconnected labyrinth where every room challenges your logic and every secret reveals a new path. No combat, just the joy of discovery and the satisfaction of solving complex puzzles in a captivating pixel art style. A mystery story set in the sewers of Salvador, Brazil. Pernell, what is Plungies?
The center and I totally forgot to mention the things that I said I would mention later in the last video. God damn it, Pernell. Let's make sure I don't do that here.
It's fine. We had an interview. We got shit to do.
But the important part is I liked it and said to buy it anyway, so hopefully that carries the weight. But this game, you star as Bonnie. Her and her friend Claudio are in the middle of a job working, doing some plumbing work in the city, and Bonnie accidentally falls to the sewer. Oh, no! And now she has to get the hell out, because apparently the drop was high and was far enough that she didn't die. It was short enough that she didn't die, but it was high enough she can't get back out. So, at this point, she has to navigate the sewers in what some might call a Metroidvania. I don't know how to call that true or not, but it doesn't matter. It's fun.
Someone who loves that term.
Ain't me. Fuck ain't me. Anyway, the way this game progresses is there are a multiple sewer systems. I recall there being like four. And each of these sewer systems are composed of multiple rooms that you can explore. Each room has a particular puzzle structure associated with it in order to progress. There is a lantern you need to acquire. Get the lantern, which is usually hanging from some sort of pole. It's hidden somewhere in the level. Once you grab that, you then have to find a fire source that is also somewhere within the room's level, that level of the room. And then lastly, you take that lit lantern to a furnace that needs to be lit. And once you light the furnace, it starts sending, like, I guess, like fire and steam through the connected pipes throughout the level, usually to some form of door that leads to another section. Sometimes it'll lead to multiple doors that will lead to multiple sections, because areas can splinter off from time to time. But getting all those three things to run through together is where the challenge of the game lies, because it involves platforming. It involves avoiding things such as spewing water from pipes that will result in you dousing the flame and having to go back and reignite your lantern. All sorts of cool things like that. It's a lot of fun to go through that process. How do I know it's that fun? Because I played the entire game in pretty much one and a half sittings. I say half because I don't think it constitutes a second sitting. I just pretty much ripped that thing apart. It's a lot of fun. It was like a 3.5 hour run to get 100%. But as you get further into the game and you go to different sections, the game adds additional caveats to kind of muck up the works and make things a little more difficult. You might find yourself in a situation where there are holes in the pipes, which means you need to acquire an item that is existing somewhere in one of the other levels that will allow you to, in turn, repair all the pipes. You might find yourself in a situation where the water is extremely mucky. Did I mention water? Yes, because there is swimming in this game. Or to be more specific, there is floating and then there is sinking, because you get the ability to sink into the water eventually, too. But you might find yourself in a situation where the water is too murky and gooey and you can't see properly. So you have to find a way to navigate murky water and or eventually clean the water, which then allows you to see in it, and so on and so forth. It's a very engaging system. Eventually, you unlock access to pipes, which will allow you to warp between different locations that you've already been to make quick travel happen. There are objects you can locate that will allow that kind of go on like a collectible binder in order to just pretty much say, hey, here's some cool stuff I found, like just the ability to acquire nice things. And if you're an achievement hunter, you'll need to get all of them to get all the achievements in the game. The game itself, there's not a ton to talk about beyond that. I will say it's interesting in that the game was, for the most part, single room puzzles. And I remember playing through the game and being like, man, it'd be nice if there were some multi-room puzzles. And the game saves the best for last because the final area of the game is pretty much a multi-room puzzle. And it changes how you have been perceiving the game up until that point in a very good way. It's very engaging, very enticing, very fun. And I like the conversation between Bonnie and Claudio. And funniest of all, there's actually two endings to the game, which I would not have seen coming, but there are two endings. Oh, and the most important element to the game, hence the title Plungies, is I mentioned how there's different things you can find that eventually navigate throughout the levels, and I don't want to spoil what those specific things are. I feel like that's kind of removing some of the discovery. But the main gimmick to the game, hence the title Plungies, is that you're a plumber and you have access to a plunger. The plunger can allow you to essentially wall jump in this game. You start out with, well, I mean, I can't remember whether you start with one or if you very quickly get it, but the important part is you have a plunger. Jump against the wall while you have not utilized exhausted the plunger, and you will stick it to the wall. This will then allow you to use the plunger as a platform to jump higher and go even further. Eventually, however, you will find additional plungers, which will allow you to do more. Now you have two plungers to climb up a wall or three plungers to climb up a wall. In addition, you start getting the ability to do additional things with the plunger, such as sticking to the ceiling and then jumping from the plunger to go across the room. And hilariously enough, because this is some kind of weird magical sewer, the plungers just warp back to you when you've done using them. So you don't even have to go and retrieve the plungers you've used. They come back to you.
That's handy.
It results in some, it's very handy because this game would be brutal if you had to retrieve your plungers. But it results in some really fun platforming challenges where you see something in a zone, you're like, how the hell do I get to that? I don't know if I have enough plungers to pull this off. And you might try to start doing things before realizing, crap, I can't do it. I need more plungers. And you'll just come back later with more plungers. Now you can see what's over there, likely a cultural collectible. But every time I got a new plunger, I felt elated to understand that means I have I can access more areas of the sewer. I can do more now. I can engage in more. And as a result, I feel less restricted. Not in a bad, I didn't feel bad in any way when I was restricted, but now I feel less restricted, which is, of course, better. All in all, this game came to me as a nice surprise. Very satisfying, very enjoyable, just the right amount of length and difficulty. I never really felt frustrated, but I still felt satisfied whenever I solved a room puzzle and lit the furnace to go to the next area. I can recommend this game with little reason not to. I had no complaints about Plungies.
Best of all, it's only a $10 game. So for $10, what is your verdict?
Easy buy it recommendation. Get up on this.
Yay. All right, we have an update on Ghost Recon's Wildlands, now the definitive edition. Developed, published, provided to us, courtesy Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft. Aki, say thank you.
Thank you.
Released July 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $99.99. The base game is available for $49.99. In the near future, Bolivia has fallen into the hands of a merciless drug cartel. Lead your team of elite soldiers and coordinate raids. Pilot drones and helicopters and drive the wildest vehicles on and off-road as you scour the breathtaking landscapes of Bolivia. Aki, you got to check out the definitive edition. Tell us about all the new content that has appeared in this game. Tell us what else is out there. What? Give us all the info. What is this game?
Okay, so in this, you play as a special forces group that comes in. You know, they're the type that if you're found, we deny you exist type people. And they're going out there to stop this entire drug production pipeline. Dude who owns it is, you know, he has all these different areas that he has all his little generals basically controlling, you know, be it kidnapping, drugs, selling stuff, taking over the airwaves and TV, stuff like that, and you're just tearing it all down. That's the base game. You also have some fantastical shit in it, like, for instance, in it you can go into the jungle and fight against the predator. Like, literally, the predator. Which is kind of fun. And while you're doing all this, you're also finding weapons that you're procuring on site, and you can switch between them. You can find different attachments around the land in weapon crates as well, so you can edit your weapons to make them better or to give them scopes that you prefer, things like that. And yeah, then there's also other DLCs that you get, including the brand new one, which is free. The prior ones were, I believe, Narco Road, which I'm pretty sure was a paid for one, where basically you came back and you were dealing with Unidad, which is basically the military police, who are all extremely corrupt in the game. And then I feel like there was one more, but I don't remember what it was anymore because it's Fallen been, Ghosts? You know.
Fallen Ghosts?
That might be what it is, but I don't remember which one that is anymore. It's been so long since I've played that. again, folks, this game's been out for a very long time. And so I didn't touch all the older DLC because I've already completed them. And then you have Last Rites, which is the new completely free DLC that they added. It's about 30 minutes to an hour worth of content. Basically, you've been called back to Bolivia from wherever the hell you were. So this probably takes place post-second game, which is a breakpoint, would be my guess. Because they very specifically mentioned that you're coming back to Bolivia, not that you're still here and you're just doing something else. So you've come back, and there is somebody who is targeting basically everybody. Crazy lady who has created a cult. And they're killing the good guys, the bad guys, to everybody. If they exist, they're getting killed because this lady wants to purge land of all the problematic people. So every foreigner is getting purged. Anyone who and the group had any amount of corruption, she's just purging the whole thing. Like, you know, there was two bad people in this group, so fuck your entire group. You're all dead. That level of she's batshit insane. And you have to go and stop her and her cult. It's something like five or six missions long. They're all pretty short. You go basically to an area, and then you have to survive for a little bit in a gunfight. It tends to typically be how it is. You go there, you find one or two pieces of intel, and then enemies show up, and you just kill them until no more enemies show up, and then you leave to the next area. It's extremely simple, but you know, it makes sense. This is free. You're not paying for this, so obviously they're not going to be like, okay, now let's make a completely free 8-hour extra bit of campaign. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, this is a title update for all versions of the game, so it's
yeah,
like it's not even a separate download. It's just included exactly, in the game.
It's just an update for it. So very quick to get through that. However, they have made changes to the entire system of the game to make it easier for people who are having trouble or just getting new to it, getting into it for the first time. I mean, that is, you now have custom sliders for the difficulty instead of just choosing one of a couple difficulties. Now you have custom sliders. And because of that, they've gotten rid of one of the best systems in the game, which is kind of upsetting, and replaced it with nothing. which really sucks. Like most Ubisoft games, they have all the premium stuff that you can buy. And in the past, as you played through the game, you got your level ups, you did certain missions, you got crates. There was also some daily and probably weekly missions that you could do that would also give you crates. And those crates you could open, and they'd give you some a randomized amount of the items that you would find in the premium shop. Many of them were up just automatic, like you start a new game, you get these weapons, so you don't have to go look for them. Were one whole set of the chests. Then another set was the premium stuff that wasn't in the base game. And then the last set was even rare premium stuff, because there's three different one the chests. And they basically removed all of that from the game, which is a shame. And instead, now you just have to buy the stuff by putting physical money into the game and then buying the packs. And like, it's 3,000. 20 bucks is like 3,000-ish points or something. And every item in there is like 1,200 points.
On one side, they're just cosmetics, right?
No. You have cosmetics for your character that changes how your character looks, how they dress and stuff. But then you also have weapons and weapon attachments and some of the cosmetics. You can get some of them from in-game crates, but not all of them. Some of them were just...
This definitive edition includes, like, a crap load of...
It does include a whole bunch, but not all of them. And...
Yeah.
I figured it would have all of them. It does not, sadly. And it really is a shame, because like, I was so close to having everything from those crates. I had like 7 items left to obtain. I was like, aww. So it's a shame they removed that and didn't bring some other like daily thing, because lots of other games do have like daily or weekly missions, so you can get a small amount of the premium currency.
And for some reason, they ended the daily and weekly stuff due to the age of the game.
It wasn't something that they had to track on their servers anymore. That was something that was actually built in the game and just ran itself, which is a shame that they removed it. But they removed it because they changed how the difficulty was set up, because people can make it so easy. I guess they just didn't want people to be able to get this premium currency and get these items real quick, even though I don't think it'd be that quick because there was a lot of shit in there. But yeah, so that's why they removed it. And it's kind of a shame, because they have like ghost mode, which is like you die once and it's game over and you restart from the very beginning. And it's, it's on the hardest difficulty, basically. That used to give you a lot of like of the really impressive chests and stuff. And you could play it over and over if you wanted. And it's a shame that that didn't at least keep it, because there isn't any difficulty changes for that. That is still hardest difficulty, one death mode, basically. So that's a shame they didn't keep it for that. Huh?
What do you get when you beat it now?
You get a weird... There was two types of currency in this game, because they can't make things simple ever. And one of them basically allowed you to buy the items in the item packs, basically. And the other one let you buy, like, oh, here's an XP boosters for this many hours. Or here you can buy, if you have this many points, you can buy a handful of chests. Things like that. And now, when you're beating different levels of the ghost mode, you get points to buy, like, XP boosters, which are useful, because you only have 30 levels to get in the game, and it doesn't take a long time to get there. Like, I'm already halfway there, and I played it for, like, a few hours. So it's kind of a shame they didn't turn that into premium currency, just so people could get more stuff out of it. Because like most of the packs, because I was getting them from the crates, I only have like a couple items out of the pack, but the price of the pack doesn't change based on that.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, so now it's like, oh, this pack's 400 of these credits. This pack's 800 of these credits. This is 1,200. It's like, I only have one item in all three of those packs that I have to finish that pack, and that kind of sucks. All but right, yeah, well, other than that, it's still the base game. So
talk about the pricing and the options on this. The base game is $50 for Ghost Recon. What are your thoughts on that?
I am totally for that. This is a really good game. I have put probably close to 200 hours in this, would be my guess. I really liked it when it first came out. I'm pretty sure I actually bought the DLC. I don't think we got it for review even. And I loved the DLC. And then this update came out, and it was great too. I've really enjoyed my time with this game.
Okay, well, Definitive Edition is $99.99, includes the game, the Season Pass, the Year 2 Pass, the Quick Start Pack, the Deluxe Pack, a Cold Eye Pack, and a Nightfall Protocol Pack. Tons of DLC goodies and bonuses, as well as the campaign stuff. What are your thoughts on the Definitive Edition at $100?
I'm pretty okay with that, because with it, you're getting all the DLC, which are generally all really good DLCs, and you're getting a whole bunch of the premium content that you would have gotten from the crates. You're not getting all of it, but you're getting a lot of it for free. You just go in, and you can just claim it, because it says free on it, which is nice. I think it's worth it. The DLCs were all really good. I think it's totally worth it.
What would you say if I told you things were on sale?
That'd be even more kick-ass.
The base game is on sale right now for about another week, as of when you hear this, at least on Xbox, for $5.
Damn.
Definitive Edition, instead of $100, $24.99.
Oh, yeah, you got to go get that. That's holy shit.
Savings of $75. And you get nearly all the goodies in the game. There is one other pack that we should mention. This was not included. It is a separate purchase completely. It is Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands Predator Premium Pack. You mentioned that you can meet the Predator in the game. This pack is $11.99. It includes, the tank top and predator wrist blades, and the exclusive close quarter combat execution move, the predator helmet facewear, and the thermal vision effect, a t-shirt, a patch, eyewear, facial paints, tattoos, headwear, and two weapons. So all of that for $12. That is a completely separate purchase. But the big thing is you could grab Definitive Edition for $25 for the next week.
Yeah, and it's totally worth it. And honestly, you can get some. Well, you used to be able to get the Predator pack from the crates as well. I have most, if not all of it. And the wrist blades, you have to equip those to get the animation. And every game that I play, I have my character equipped with those because it's so fucking awesome. You pull out the blades, you run up, and you shank a bitch, yank them into the air, and toss them to the ground. So cool.
Very nice. All right, let's move on. We have two games to talk about. Echoes. I like when they line up like that. Dream Echo. Developed and published by Hot Water Studio. Released August 10th on Steam for $11.99. Dream Echoes is an atypical top-down roguelite ARPG centered on loot grinding and meta progression. Explore the dream world, collect concepts, and enjoy highly free combative combat. Upon waking, gather memories to carry some concepts into your next adventure.
Adventure.
For now, what is Dream Echo?
No.
Echo.
Oh, go.
Dream Echo.
Go. Okay. Okay, I better stop. This review will be horrible, horrible, horrible. Okay, so I'm dropping the terminology because it drove me crazy in the game, and I'm not going to carry it into this review. I'm going to describe it as an actual game and leave it at that. In this game, your main character is apparently trapped in some sort of dream space, and the only way to escape is to wake up naturally, which means they can't die in the dream, and they cannot. It won't wake up if they die in the dream. They have to make it to morning. So for reasons that didn't quite click for me, because this game has some interesting elements of translation, you are tasked with going into this memory hub world, and this is where all your character updating and crafting can be done, and then going into a dream space to explore in the form of interconnected 2D battle screens. So starting off, you'll enter an environment. It might be like the realm of grief, or I don't know, the snow peak round ruins or something like that. And you'll be asked to choose from one of two gates. The thing that makes you choose which gate is which is that each one has its own reward. Once you've chosen the gate, you'll enter, and the game will officially pretty much run off in a heist, in a haste. And what happens is your character has essentially what can be called a weapon type, and that weapon type comes with a series of perks that are associated with how it would play. The game calls it a deck. I was trying to edit the deck that the game said I could, but it was giving me some problems. So I just kind of blindly chose the weapon and deck type that seemed to most resonate with me, which, funny enough, is going to factor into what I give this score. I chose the summon type, something that allowed me to summon minions. But ultimately what happens is once you've chosen one of those things, you get active business. I had a gun that also let me do some summons. Your main attack is either your gun, as I had, which let me fire bullets, but there's also other weapons that are melee-based, such as like great swords or swords. And I also remember coming across things like staffs that I was able to unlock. You get access to two equipable skills. And those things range from a variety of things, including like mines that you can put on the ground that, when triggered, allow you to deploy a skill that you banked inside the mine. There are various, like, you know, attacks that let you, like, sort of, like, drop a black hole on the ground that will suck enemies in and do damage to them. There are fireballs and all sorts of stuff like that. And they all do damage related to a variety of different stats. Four different stats, to be specific. Just like intelligence, attack, and faith, and there's one other one. Defense, I believe, but I could be wrong. You use these abilities to fight the stuffing out of enemies. When you defeat enemies, they drop items from time to time. It could drop concepts, which is essentially a currency that you spend back at the hub skill tree, or dream coins, which can be spent at shops that you might come across during your run, various items that can be equipped back at the shop or back at the hub. But once this is all done, once you've killed a room full of enemies, you'll get whatever the reward was for that room, and you'll be tasked with choosing between two warps that have different rewards. The rewards could be things related to getting more of those aforementioned equipable items. You might get access to a rest area where you can heal. Spend a rest period to gain hope. Hope are the lives that you get during a run. If you die, you resurrect using the hope you have. Or you can actually spend hope to get increased drop rates. I'm sorry, not increased drop. Can't remember exactly what it was because I almost never did it. But basically, if you spend two hope, you'll get a really good, like, primeval talent. What is a primeval talent? Well, there are these things called talents in the game of two types. There's basic types and there's primeval. Best way to describe these is they are passive buffs that will make your character stronger in various ways. You'll be able to use as many basic ones as you want, but you can only have up to six of the special type that I mentioned earlier. But yeah, that's one of the things you can get by casting out two of your lives if you choose to do that at a rust area. So, you know, other things you can get, again, like more dream coins. You can get access to a treasure chest, which will have a bunch of different items you can earn that can be used at the hub, so on and so forth. Eventually, you'll come across a boss that you have to beat down. If you manage to defeat the boss, you'll get a plethora of good rewards, then move on to the next hub, unless that is the end of your expedition. Once you get to the end of an expedition, though, you will be able to cash out your rewards, go back to the hub, and after your first run, the game will teach you that you'll get items called tickets, when you do these various runs. So that when you go back into the home, into the warp to start another run again, you'll have to use a ticket that you've earned to start off your run. The ticket determines the types of enemies you'll fight, potentially the different areas you go to. I don't know, because frankly, I didn't understand what the heck they were telling me they were doing, with the exception of knowing the level of the loot you'll get when you use it. I was particularly just saying, well, I get high-level loot here. Good, I'm using this ticket. That was how I did it when I played. As far as being back at the hub, things you can do to kind of buff yourself is, again, I mentioned earlier, there's equipable items you can earn during your runs that can be equipped back at the hub to give you various perks and further buffs. You can do a sort of forging action to improve these items by sticking sub-items onto them to unlock additional buffs on things. You'll be doing things like that. There is the Memory Cafe, which honestly I barely utilize because I'll get to why in a short bit. And lastly, one of the reasons why I didn't do it was there was also a skill tree that you could spend, basically, I guess it was like creativity or whatever on. But for some reason, when I was playing the game, I would spend it, but it didn't seem to actually unlock the perk. In fact, I used the creativity on one node of the skill tree 3 times. It didn't unlock, but it spent the currency every time I did it. Maybe I did something wrong, but I feel like even if I did do something wrong, the game shouldn't let me spend the same currency 3 times on something I didn't get. That's
a bummer.
Yeah, it annoyed me. But afterwards, when you're done doing all your hub stuff, you go back into the world, choose a ticket to spend to go back into the dreamscape, and you go at it again. Now, this game has potential. I'm not going to go out and just poo-poo on it. That would be a jerk move to do. But I will specify the fact that, one, the way the game introduced a bunch of the systems, maybe it was due to like some elements of translation. Maybe it was the way that they worded things. Maybe it was just the pacing that they did it. I don't know. But some of the elements in the game didn't quite click with me as intuitive to say, okay, I'm going to do this now to make this better. Some of it I was able to pick up on my own just from playing games of this nature over time. But when they used various terminologies that I didn't really care for, it made it a little harder to just kind of glomp on to say, okay, I can forge this into this by adding this to that on this screen.
Yeah, I will say you mentioned localization. The Steam page mentions that the localization was AI assisted. So that might explain some of the funkiness.
Well, guess what? AI failed you, buddy.
Yeah, it sure did. Even some of the Steam page screens and write-up, they just look and sound weird. So I would encourage Hot Water Studio to hire a proper translator and look into some of this stuff.
100%, because this, it absolutely reduced the enjoyment level of your game, flat out. And I didn't even know it was AI, so it's not even shitting on AI at this point. It's just, it existed, and now you told me why. In addition to that, and this is going to be weird. I know you like to do that thing where you say, what would you do to fix this? And frankly, I don't know. But you'll hear what I say in a second, and you'll get why. There are some weird balancing things going on here. And what I mean by that is, my very first run, well, the game starts you off as like giving you a broadsword. It's like basically introducing you to the world, say, hey, I'll go here now, do this. Boom, you're in the hub. But when you enter your first run onward, you get to choose a weapon, like I mentioned earlier. I chose a pistol that had the ability to summon scrap balls. That's what the game gave me as an option. And my entire series of runs from that point on, because it just made freaking sense to do every time, was pick the same weapon every run, summon things indefinitely. Because when you use summons, it's a skill that uses MP. But the gun, after I summon and run out of MP to an extent, I can use the reload option, like a gun would have, to refill all of my MP. So I just continued to summon things over and over again, would attack on a side to assist until it was done. Eventually, every perk I earned, every talent, be it primordial or whatever the freaking special was, the special ones or the regular ones, whenever I had an option to choose, I took a perk that specialized in supporting summons specifically. And then I found a spell that basically allowed me to blast a flamethrower for as long as I wanted until I ran out of magic. So every single run, I did the same thing because it just worked. Regardless of anything I equipped, regardless of anything I did, this was the go-to. And it's, and I eventually got a better summon that I could earn. I equipped the better summon. Sometimes I just used two summons and just summoned both things. I had a chain running at one point where my casting speed was 80% higher, so I was almost able to instantaneously summon things. And I could summon 12 things total on the screen. One that was melee, one type that was distance or ranged. And I just kept summoning those guys over and over again and firing pistol shots when I max out the summons. And it got me through everything. Even when the bosses started getting difficult, I just evaded the attacks and kept summoning things.
Damn.
What I mean is that, did I have fun doing it? Yeah, I can say I did. But the problem with that statement is games like this thrive on variety builds, the desire to want to change things up, feeling like there's always a reason to do one thing over another thing, so you never stick with one thing unless it's a personal preference. In this context, I saw no reason to try anything else. I couldn't think of anything. Why bother? And that's what I mean by I have no answer for you, because like the general statement is going to be balancing. But as it goes with games like this, balancing is going to make somebody happy and somebody else unhappy. But from my experience with the game, aside from the thing with the whole tech tree not working for me and the translation being mucky, I couldn't decide to do anything else but that strategy. I saw no reason to do anything different.
Yeah.
And that will determine what a lot of people may feel about this game.
I will say, looking at the Steam page, some of the like the videos, the clips, and the screenshots, the game looks really fun. Like, it just looks like mindless. Like, it kind of reminds me of like a Dynasty Warriors, in that you're just mindlessly beating the shit out of everything.
It kind of has that, except the enemies aren't as endless. You go to a room, there's a certain number of enemies in the room, and you kill them. They don't keep respawning.
I just mean like the mindless bashing, just like to wreck everything.
Aspect. Yep, that's about it. Because ultimately, it's just make numbers go up and then beat enemies up and keep going.
Yeah,
that is literally the game.
$11.99. What do you think?
I want to say deny from the AI quip alone, but to be blunt, I'm going to give it a genuine try, because though I do have my problems with it, there is room for them to make improvements and make the game more better. I'm just going to say the word better. And the bones on this game are sturdy. So rather than, take the piss on it, I'd rather just say give the game some time and see if it improves. But if you liked what I said already, well, you're already on the ground floor. Give it a try, and it can only go up from here.
Yeah. Throw it on a wish list, wait for a sale, maybe?
Yeah, I can go with that.
Cool. One final game to talk about. We got more Echoes. With Echo Breaker, developed by Upstream Arcade, published by Weekend Games, released August 6th on Steam for $8.99. A lightning-fast precision speedrunner where you pilot an armored rig that can manipulate time itself. Every second matters, and going faster means risking everything. Purnell, what is Echo Breaker?
Breaker. Right. So Echo the Dolphin, it is not. And this game is essentially a speed-based precision platformer, or I guess run-based. Yeah, I'm sticking with that. The game takes place over a series of levels, individualized, and your goal is simply to get from the beginning of the level to the end of the level as fast as you can. That's it. That's the game. But it's how you do that and how well you do that that will take up all of your time with this game. And you will spend a lot of time with this game because it is very, the controls are tight, and it is some very, is nail, like, nail-bitingly tight as far as like getting from beginning to end in a perfect run. Every level has this feeling to it.
This one looks like it will destroy Aki's senses if she tries playing this one.
Very possible. It definitely gave me some run for my money, because you know how I get without getting platinum ranking and stuff on levels.
I mean, like the backgrounds and the like, all the flashiness and.
Oh, that one, I wouldn't go so far. I mean, it may look like that in the screens, but I don't remember being particularly flashy. Like the closest thing you get to flash is there's like a certain type of floor tile that's very bright and shiny. But what happens, like, you'll be running through the game from point A to point B. There's a jump option, In the game will show you in the upper left corner the percentage of speed you are going. Like you're going at 100% speed, maximum speed, or 80% maximum speed. And you want that to be at 100% or greater as long as you possibly can. Did I say over 100%? Yeah, I did. I'll get to that. Every level also requires you to destroy a number of targets before reaching the end of the level. And due to the fact that as a time trial based game, if you miss a target, just start the level over. There's no point in trying to find it unless you just, just give it up. The way you take out targets is as you run through levels, you'll occasionally come across a weapon.
Quick, does it have a quick restart or does it like you have to stop and hit pause?
Thank God it does. The select button kicks you right back to the thing. You go again and it's
very good.
A pretty quick reset. I'm grateful because for a while I was going to the menu and I hate it. So, but the game eventually said, oh, you can just press this button. It's like, thank God. But the way you destroy enemies is occasionally you'll come across a weapon on the ground. And once you pick it up, the weapon will give you a number of distinct uses. And if you use it, oh, I guess before I say that also, you do have a default weapon that's pretty weak and shite and like picky. But if that's what you need, that's what you need. And you can attack enemies with it to kill them. But occasionally you will find better weapons on the ground that you can use to get the job done more efficiently. Those weapons will also have a special effect that you can use to attack from a distance, but it will use the entirety of the meter for the weapon when you apply it. So use sparingly. You'll be linking these all together to try to kill things, get through the level, and get to the end before the time runs out. Now, why is this game called Echo Breaker? Well, because of the one feature I'm about to describe right now, which is that eventually the game introduces echoes. Echoes are essentially your life. Every time you take a hit, an echo goes away. You run out of echoes, you die. But if you like living on the edge, which to get those platinum ranks, you're going to, you can actually spend an echo to do a little bit of time manipulation or time dilation. The game will kind of slow down a little bit, giving you the ability to, I guess, potentially dodge attacks or whatnot, but the primary reason to do it is because of this. You can attack enemies while the game is slowing down. Every time you kill an enemy while you're in the middle of an echo stasis, you'll develop a charge. And when you run out of echo timing, as in it might be like a 5-second run, once it runs out, you'll get a massive burst of speed that can help you get a better time. In addition to using echoes for that, you can also use them to give you a boost when you jump in the air. So essentially a double jump. If you don't get where I'm going with this yet, you will after the next thing I say, which is that in addition to that mechanic, there are also the occasional speed boost zones. Think F-Zero's healing zones where you drive through them. In this case, if you drive through them, you'll get a speed boost for the entire time you're running through it. Combine echoes with those dash zones and also the effect that you can occasionally find ways to kind of break the map and do things that you're almost not intended to. Well, you're intended to do them, but on the offset, you wouldn't think you were intended to do them. And you're looking for shortcuts and looking for every which way you can to shave even a millisecond off of your time. At the end of a level, based on the ranking you get, you'll unlock various things for future plays. What's most notably, in my personal opinion, is a potential hint icon. If you get a gold ranking on a level, the game will show you, or it might be silver, either way, the game will eventually show you an icon during the run of the map indicating a potential shortcut you could take if you figure out how to do it. It's a good way to give you an indication right off the bat, like, man, I'm not doing this as efficiently as I thought I was. Time to try this new shortcut. There are things that the game, I don't even want to say certain things because I feel like it was cool for me to learn them myself. But there are things you can do that will essentially feel like you're breaking the game, including, though this is fine to spoil, including jumping off the edge of the map because you see another platform way off in the distance you can make it out to if you do things just right. This game has that secret sauce to it. The music is good. The pacing is frenetic. Every turn is tight. Every second matters. The restart button is just a thumb press and a millisecond away. And one more run will roll off your tongue. Now, one thing that I will say this game might piss people off for, in fact, I know it's pissed a couple people off because I've seen them talking about it online, but it doesn't really bother me for a specific reason, and that is that the last levels are walled behind damn near perfecting the game. Oh. As in, you have to unlock the last levels by getting high to perfect rankings on the levels that came before it. Ouch. Many people hate that by complaining about the game locking levels behind skills. I am not that guy, because I remember an era when you could unlock things by doing things well. As in to say, here's your reward for doing well in this game, more content. I get that some people don't want that, but I'm one of those people that hated it when I beat Mario 64 and all I got was a dumbass triple jump and the Yoshi on the top of the castle. I like when I get actual tangible fun rewards for doing well at something, because I like games, and sometimes, especially games that involve you perfecting runs and stuff and getting better at their systems, I feel like there should be some benefit to doing it. Like, hey, due to mastering everything we threw at you, here are some super messed up levels that you've earned access to. Good luck. You'll need it. I'm fine with that. Unlocking the special world in Super Mario World, I thought that was awesome. If the game just gave it to you without finding access to it, that's not nearly as fun. Again, I think it's obviously a personal preference. You're not wrong for wanting everything unlocked, but I personally feel like that's kind of a lost art form nowadays, of a game letting you earn things by playing it well, as opposed to just saying, well, here's your achievement. Like, yeah, whatever. Give me gameplay. I don't give a fuck about an achievement. So for me, I'm happy with that. Your mileage may vary, though. Either way, though, even if you don't get into the idea of unlocking content, the actual game that you get prior to unlocking it even is a lot of fun. And I do believe it is worth your money and your time.
All right. Well, speaking of money, it is another fairly affordable one. It is $9. What is your verdict?
Buy that bad boy. Boy.
Sounds good. And with that, we're done.
You could have jumped in anytime. You could have been like,
yeah, no, she's not. She doesn't care about what we do. Big thanks to the two of you for being here. Big thanks to Bree for being here in the first half of the show, along with Sasha from Full Set. Big thanks to Matt for coming on, doing his review with us. It's always good having you here, Matt.
I'm not here. I never showed up. None of this ever happened.
Well, don't.
That was a recording, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was. Just like this one.
Jesus Christ. He fell.
Yep, that is one of my favorite sound effects. Is. Jesus Christ. Like, apparently his sister just like spooked him while he was sitting there. He didn't expect anyone to be home, and he like fell out of his chair. That was.
And somehow he didn't break his leg on that scenario.
I know, right? Isn't that crazy, Matt?
What?
My leg!
All right. We are going to end the show with some more Mustin music from his Final Fantasy VI album. This time we're going with Strago's theme. How do you think that'll go?
He's old, but he's enjoyable.
Good stuff. Have you listened to the album yet?
I'm behind in like everything.
Oh, dude, it's damn. So good. We got to get.
What's it called?
It is a World of Balance character portraits from Final Fantasy VI.
Okay, I'll look it up.
It is very, very good. It is available on all digital outlets now. You can get it on Bandcamp. I actually just bought it on Bandcamp so I could get a physical CD to give to my mom.
Well, she will listen to that?
Oh my god, she loves Mustin.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she was so thrilled the One-Ups played my wedding. Like,
that is really cool.
She loves William Reyes from the One-Ups. Like, she was thrilled when he accepted her friend request on Facebook. She was like, oh my god, he accepted my friend request.
It's like I met a celebrity. You sure did, Mom.
I love it. My mom's awesome.
But, my mom really wasn't in any of that video game stuff. So yeah, your mom is pretty awesome for that alone.
I think I told the story that she used to be able to beat Contra on 3 lives, no continues.
Damn. She's better than most people at that game then.
Yeah, no shit. She used to be really fucking good at games. And then she just stopped caring. I don't know. Anyway, we are going to play that song from Mustin. Does any... Aki, we'll give it to you. Do you have any final words to end the show since you've been quiet?
No, sorry.
Come on, you got to have something. You've been sitting there this whole time. You've got to have something built up.
Like, I've been scratching my crotch this whole time. What else do you want me to do?
Nah.
Should we give Matt the final words?
Yes.
Of course.
That old folder almost killed me. Jesus Lord.